actually since we've done a live show, because two shows ago we did our pre-record of what the band is like, and you got to meet the band. And then last one we did a pre-record with regards to an archive file. So today we are live. Happy to be live. Things have changed for us a little bit since the last time, though, haven't they, Ash?
Oh, yes.
For the band itself, we have welcomed a new bassist, Kirsten Valentik Hartwig. Welcome, Kirsten, if you're listening. I think you are. We are excited to have her on board. Kevin Stewart Swain has decided to follow other ventures, and we wish him all the best, and the love is still there. No hard feelings, nothing. Kevin's even said that perhaps we'll be working in the future, as you know, with production and engineering and whatnot. But that being said, we're still excited. We've sent out a newsletter just announcing all of this. If you're interested in being in our mailing list, just give us a dingle on the email, and we'll send you our newsletter. And also,
what's a dingle?
A dingle is ring-a-ding-a-dingy on the email.
Oh, I know that's a phone. You say dingle for phone.
I know, but I said dingle for email because you know what?
That would be more like ping.
I like to roll that way.
Oh.
Anyways, if you want to be on our newsletter, info@hollow-gram.com, just send us an email, send us your email address, and we'll send you our newsletter. And we are so thrilled because today we are doing an interview, and I want to give you a little bit of a backstory, because this gentleman here, his name is Richard Henry Blair, and we are excited to have Richard, who has so graciously agreed to be interviewed by us, because we love Richard's philosophy. We love what he's doing. He's creative. He's philanthropic. He's just an amazing man. For those of you who don't know who Richard is, he is a producer, a musician, a writer, a social activist, and a nature conservationist, to name probably only a very few of what he really is. There's just so much on his very eclectic resume that we couldn't even tap into every single thing. And we wanted to do a different kind of interview, not your typical, that you can read what's already on his bio, which is quite extensive and quite impressive. But we want to get to know Richard the man. And so we're excited to be interviewing him. He has no idea what we're going to ask him, so we are trusting everything will be fine and nothing's going to be uncomfortable. And we also welcome our callers to call in if you have a question for Richard. It won't be a discussion today because we're limited for time. But if you are interested in asking him one question, please call in, and the number is on your screen there, and we'd be happy to have you just basically ask Richard your question, and look forward to him answering it. So, I would like to welcome Richard Henry Blair. Hello, Richard.
Hi. Hello, Cheryl, Catherine, and hello, Ash. It's wonderful to be here. Thank you. I'm really honored and delighted to be here this evening.
Well, we are honestly, sincerely from our hearts honored to have you here. And thank you for agreeing. I just wanted to tell the listeners how we know you.
Go ahead.
All right. So here's the beautiful benefits of social media.
Absolutely.
I met you through social media. We met through Facebook, did we not? Or did we meet?
We actually met through Twitter.
Ah, there you go.
While before Facebook.
Isn't that something? And you're not really active on your Twitter anymore, are you?
No, I haven't been. I've migrated to Facebook.
Well, and what a lovely migration. You're pretty well at your maximum friends on Facebook, aren't you?
It was unintentional. I've only been on for about a year, but I think I kind of just all my various networks and groups over the years kind of came together, and then suddenly I was, meeting new folks and so forth. So it's been really fun and a real revelation. It's exciting to feel really a part of the global community in a powerful way, and it's great to share, great to learn, great to get involved in the passions and dreams of other people and to see what they think. I find it very stimulating. It keeps me moving forward and keeps me thinking clearly about the world I'm living in. I enjoy that.
Well, that's wonderful. I mean, you have quite an extensive education around sociology and psychology, and you're obviously very interested in the human race.
Well, I am, and I think increasingly too over time, it's about coming to life with an open heart. You know, the Buddhists believe that our mind is located in the middle of our chest. And I can't always quite go there, but I do believe that an open heart is an open mind, and so it's bringing kind of as I mature, bringing more and more of myself completely to the experience of life and to meeting new people and getting involved to some degree or other in their projects. I mean, I really do care about what people are up to, so it's fun. And of course, you two being musicians and actively recording and I assume performing and so forth, and I know your background a bit, Cheryl, and know how active you've been in innumerable fields, and acting and producing and music and the like, so over the years. So, you know, this is fun for me. It's kind of an opportunity to share with like minds here tonight.
Well, that's how we feel, Richard, and yes, just what really caught my eye too on your Facebook was you had this quote here. It's the love, it's the music, it's the people.
Yeah.
Would you say that pretty much sums up a lot of where you are at this point in your life?
It is. It has been. I was lucky to come from a musical family. My father's side of the family, kind of a Scottish clan, and on the weekends we'd all get together and play guitars and harmonica and sing in kind of clan fashion. And so it brought a certain kind of energy to my life. And my early days of producing in England, I was there. It was love. It was a love quest. I was invited to come to England. I was invited to get involved in organizing and producing and working with young people, going out into the streets and really enjoying, you know, the process of finding new talent and finding new voices that had never been heard before. You know, that's what's really cool about music. It gives everyone an opportunity to be heard, you know, to experience their inner voice in a powerful way and represent it back and with rhythm and melody and offer it to others, you know, to share. And that's kind of like going back to the mothership, you know. It's music is a portal to that, to I think the core of the universe. It's what draws us there. I think it's why teenagers spend so much time with earphones in, and they're not avoiding life. They're kind of going back to a kind of something more essential kind of being and trying to connect with it through music. And so for me, yes, love's a big part of it. And sometimes it's tough love, but it's always love. It's fun. It's fun. It continues to be fun, and it's years later, and I'm still at it and doing different things now and kind of morphing into, you know, new equations and new projects. But, yes, it's always the music. I play a variety of instruments. I play almost every day. I do it because I love it. It's passion, and it's a way to, you know, kind of connect with the deeper places of myself. So.
Well, that's beautiful. And what I really appreciate about you, Richard, is that you give back. You're very interested in developing other people's talents, other people's creativity, and in very unique ways. Because we were reading your bio and read about you finding you were the founder of ISIS.
Yes.
And that was a nonprofit. Would you like to say a little bit about that? Does that have any relevance to your life at this point?
Well, only in that it was a very sweet part of my life about 15 or so years ago. And that was, in essence, what I was just previously describing about being invited to come to England by some folk singers and so on to come help organize folks in Yorkshire. And so we started ISIS, and it became a very a large organization, a production, a promotion organization that not only encouraged young and new performers, both primarily singer-songwriters I'm talking about, going into the streets and bringing them into studio, but also then introducing them to a new technology, which is what I brought over. It was not really available in England, and it was just streaming audio. We could do it in the States here, and through AT&T, I was hooked up to their servers, and so I could bring that there, and we could get people hooked up to the internet. This is long before MySpace, and certainly before Facebook and any of the other social networking organizations. And so this was kind of a really cool thing to be doing, and everyone could, you know, you could suddenly be heard in Australia, or people in Canada could be listening to some punk group in Northern England and with a click, you know. And it was just a kind of miraculous thing. It gave everyone an inspiration and a boost. It had to give them a sense of the possible. They, you know, folks, I think in Northern England, and I'll speak to that because it's a reflection of so many areas that feel isolated in small towns where, kind of, well, most of us come, many of us come from small towns, I did, but But, you know, going into a recording studio was very, at that point, was a very remote possibility. Having anyone really care and hear about your music was a remote possibility. I know the folks in Northern England always felt that, you know, the love in the music industry stopped just north of London, you know, and that no one ever came north to hear what we were up to and what they were doing. And all these great young folks were there kind of, you know, just teeming with talent and creativity. So we were able to open those doors and also to archive traditional music, but encourage young new performers and also performers who had been around a long time who really hadn't had the chance to be heard or to be promoted properly, certainly not in the folk or jazz or classical zones. And so we gave them that opportunity. And that was really the foundation of ISIS. And we went on for quite a few years, had a label and did a lot of promotion and then started a booking agency because so many of them wanted to, you know, to get out and perform, make some money. So we did all kinds of cool things. And it kind of ran its course, and you know, the goodness carries on there. So,
well, as I said, I think that's a big part of what you had described as, you know, it's the love, it's the music, it's the people. You're actually living this, and yeah. Your resume shows how you're living this. And because we are musicians and we honor the musician that you are, Richard, we want to talk a little bit about music. And actually, Ash drew up some questions, and I'd like to sort of pass it on to her, and she can ask you some of these questions.
Hi, man.
Hey, Ash.
It's so good to finally meet you. We've been so excited to do this interview.
Oh, me too. Thank you, Ash. It's wonderful to meet you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I know. So we were like just kind of talking about stuff and seeing, just, you know, even looking at all your stuff that you have online and just being so excited. And I really want to know just everything, like, you know, everything that we've read, and I still have this one question that's burning in my head, and I have to ask it. Okay, are you ready?
Yes,
okay.
I am. I hope.
But you have to do this. This is a prerequisite.
Okay.
I need to know your five most influential albums. You got to pick five for me. I want to know what your, even if it's your five favorite bands or artists. I'm just
stoked. Okay. That's tough. That's very tough.
I know, isn't it?
That's incredibly tough. Oh, I'd have to pick in different categories. Can I do like 50?
Oh, you can do anything you want. Just name some of your
favorite.
Well,
let me just do some things that come to mind.
Like favorite bands.
Bands? You mean rock bands?
Anything you want. Like five groups or bands or singer-songwriter, anything that you really like.
Let me back up a bit, and I'll start probably early days would have been, in the States, it would have been the Beach Boys for me, and I think probably the Rolling Stones and the Kinks, that would be a good three right there. I graduated into the Who when they came along, and then probably I'm going to have to add Jethro Tull for progressive rock purposes, and I actually had a chance to connect with some of them and their various graduates over time when I got to England, and their offshoots and still do, so it's fun to have these kind of connections. So I guess probably that's my first group, and those are kind of groups of my youth. But I actually remember, and I probably shouldn't be telling this story, but it's like one Easter, my mom asked me what I wanted for an Easter present, you know, the kind of thing you get in your basket along with your little chocolate eggs and gumdrops and things, and God knows whatever else. Well, I ended up asking for a Kinks album, and I actually, she went out and got it for me. It was like this first or second album, and it was just like so
that's
totally
so cute.
Cool.
That's
when
you,
that's love, you know, that's when your mom loves you.
That is love. That definitely is. Let me tell you that.
And now you're a man who's spreading love. So, hey, your mom had a big part of that, right?
Totally cool. She loved music. She did. There are drummers on both sides of the families and musicians all over the place. And I had a couple of uncles who were in vaudeville doing all kinds of anything to make a buck and to sing and, you know, perform and so forth. And a lot of country and western singers and some jazz music. All, you know, virtually every genre, every variety. So, you know, music, what was ever was, you know, on the guitar that week. So anyway, so no, that's my five. That's my five rock groups.
Well, you did really well. You describe yourself as you like conversational jazz. What exactly is conversational jazz, Richard?
Oh, just wide open playing, sitting down with several other people, and I guess just having a, you know, kind of a a melodic structure in mind or a song, and then just talking, just being very wide open to what each other is doing. And of course, that's jazz in essence, the best of jazz, but so much of it has kind of gotten processed that it's really nice to pull back and to really play, to really to demonstrate mastery and, but more important, listening at a heart level to what the other musicians are saying and where they're going. And that, for me, is the ultimate as a musician. That's really at best, if I could spend my time as a musician, that would be what I would do.
That's so cool.
I love that. I've been playing, you know, for a long, long time. And periodically I'll get a moment to do that. So, and it's really nice. It's a sense of moving into a really transcendent zone, which is just beyond, as you know, it's beyond music. It's beyond the stage. It's mm-hmm. connecting powerfully with, you feel like you're playing with the gods, you know, and the great people that are in the room with you. So.
That's great, because what as you're speaking, you're reminding me of what you said at the beginning, that the Buddhists believe that the mind is in the center of the chest. And so when you're playing from the heart, you're playing from that center of the chest, the same place, right?
Absolutely. It really is about opening up your heart, ultimately. It sounds deceptively simple and maybe simple-minded, and that's the beauty of it. In fact, that's, I think, the deepest truth. As I age, what I hope to do is increasingly find ways to open up more and more so and within myself and then to others, you know, and no matter what, in what kind of connection I have, musically or just a moment of conversation. It's kind of, you know, right now it's very high on my list. So.
Well, that's beautiful. We totally relate to that. That is, it's a lifelong journey, actually, of being that, having that vulnerability to truly be authentic and open. Is it not?
Yeah, it is. I think so, Cheryl. I think it's exactly what it is. And it takes, as you know, I mean, you just described in your introduction that your band is going through a transformation and a change of members, and so you're opening up again in a courageous way to take in a new musician, and why you think, well, you just plug in a bass player and it's the same thing. Well, it's not. It's never the same thing.
It's really not about even the skill of
exactly.
a bass.
Exactly. I mean, every new being, I mean, it's not like playing the notes and the bars. It's an entirely different energy and personality. And so that's courageous to do that. And it takes, you know, it takes a measure of openness to proceed in that way. So, you know, I really wish you all luck, the two of you, you and Ash,
to
go ahead in this new venture. It's totally cool.
We're really excited. This band means the world to us.
It does. It does. And we, like you, Richard, it's not just about the music. The music is a beautiful universal language that conveys so much, but it's really just about love, peace, authenticity, truth. So this is where we resonate with you. And, and we're just, as I said, we're just so excited to share what it is that you do and what you bring to the planet and to any and all who come into contact with you, including ourselves, because you've been a blessing to us. And I wanted to talk a little bit about your ranches, because
yes.
you're a writer as well as a musician, and you really do wish to help others with their own creative process and also have a passion for nature, for animals. And this actually is Ash's question, and I'll just say it for her because I'm going in this direction. How do you see music and nature coexisting? Like, how is the relationship for you in terms of the creative process? Because you're bringing a lot of things together.
I think, well, thank you. Yes, I do think it adds a tone. It adds a certain kind of energy and depth of being, connecting with nature. My ancestral background is primarily Celtic with about one quarter Native American. So to be in nature for me is, there's a strong sense of home, and there's a strong sense of this is where my ancestors are and where I need to be. So I do have a sense of, and to be communing with nature in a powerful way and providing also kind of home shelter for animals and creatures of all sorts puts me in a different place. And I think that energy carries into music. It carries into my sense of, my sense of being and my sense of purpose. You know, I feel much more at home within myself, I guess, when I'm a caretaker for property. So
yes.
I have an active ranch. I've got probably 40,000 trees that I do not take care of to some degree, and they provide oxygen and nests and places for animals to come and be and to hide when they need to, or nest when they need to, or provide shelter or well-being or opportunities to connect or, you know, develop whatever kind of relationships they need to develop. So birds of all stripes and critters of all stripes. I feel a responsibility to do that, and I think I always have. So it's really interesting that I continue to. I think it gets stronger in me too, as I age. It gets stronger. So I kind of recommit. You know, it's a lot of work. I do a lot of the work myself. I enjoy doing it. You know, I'm out there on my own tractor. I have my own chainsaws. Yeah, I could hire people to come in and help, but I prefer to do it myself because it. And when I can use tools that are not engine driven, I prefer that too. I just like the quiet being and the quiet tending to. And I guess ultimately it brings me deeper into my being, and it's got to be good for music or writing or just being, you know, just being. So
that's really cool. That's really, really cool. I'm really happy that you have the place for animals too, because even some, like, me and my friends have talked a lot about, like, even like the farm sanctuary and other places, which is obviously different than what you're doing, but I mean, it's anywhere that really opens a place for animals to just exist rather than, you know, fear. I mean, that's really amazing.
Yes, it all matters. You know, every opportunity to save or rescue or be kind to an animal, it matters. And even, you know, stopping your car in the middle of the road to shoo a tortoise to the side safely, or move a bug or a snake sometimes. I mean, I do think it really matters deeply within our being. It resonates. I mean, I've seen it here in Florida where these mad truck drivers, you know, pick up guys, big, burly, working men, you know, working class guys who are God knows what they're doing, but they will just stop and put their flashing lights on, blasting away right in the middle of the road out here, and get out and just kind of nudge a little tortoise into the, you know, off the road, off the highway, back to safety. And it's really, I've seen it happen several times, and it's really kind of sweet. You know, these are some big tough guys, and they're out there like these, you know, there's the young children with this great kind of attachment and fondness for nature. So yeah, any chance you can be kind to any creature, I think it comes back to you, and it really it's a way of speaking deeply to our collective being, our collective consciousness, what brings us all together, what binds us all, what the meaning of our lives really, and in the deeper places. So.
Well, you're speaking of animals, and Ash spoke a little bit about animals, and one of her questions was, she's pointing it out to me, was, do you find that what you intake into your body has any factor to the outcome of your creative process? So
yeah,
wondering if you're vegetarian
or vegan.
Or vegan with your belief system.
I'm not entirely. No, I have been. But I do. I'm very careful about what I put in. Yeah. I eat a lot of salmon. But I eat a lot of nuts and broccoli and salads and so forth. I try to get as much organic stuff in me as possible. And I allow myself the occasional pizza and so forth, and I like good wine and so on. But yeah, over time I've refined more and more my diet, and it really suits me because I feel better, and I know that I'm doing good things for my body. And I think that does, yes, it's a very good question, Ash. I think it does affect my sense of well-being and my creative energy as well. I don't want to be running on red meat, you know. I don't really want to have that kind of stuff running, coursing through my system. That's not really what I need to connect. So I have done that. I'm not saying I'm opposed to it for others. But for me, I don't need that kind of energy. So.
Good answer.
Well, we kind of vacillate too between, Ash has been a vegan for many years, but then going to vegetarianism and adding some fish and on. And it's the same thing as just everyone finding a balance and recognizing the interconnectedness of all things, right? So you're saying
totally.
This about red meat coursing through your veins and exactly for what it may be right for one person. There's no judgment, but just really recognizing energetically everything that affects us, right?
That's right. Yes, that's exactly what it is. And yes, and I prefer to just feel good. You know, I mean, I feel like it's not just fuel. I'm providing for myself. It's a statement I'm making every time I eat, and I'm wanting to be kind of in, you know, in balance and in harmony with myself much of the time. Yeah. And I mean you have to have your protein. I have a friend who's a Chinese medicine expert, and she's always harping away at protein, and you know, the Chinese eat pork, and they have, you know, all kinds of meats that in balance and so forth. So I've learned a bit, and I've probably softened my view a little bit, although I really could, you know, I could live on fish and vegetables, and pretty much do, and nuts too. So nuts and berries, you know, a lot of blueberries, a lot of almonds, so that kind of stuff.
Well, that's good. I mean, again, I don't think many people really talk about what they eat. And I think it's important for us to sort of put that out there, even especially as creative, as artists, and as people who are genuinely trying to sort of find balance within ourselves so we can share that with the world, that how do we do it? And this is what we're asking you, because you're quite, you know, you're very intriguing, and we see what you're doing as extremely positive and actually, you know, it's really working, and it comes from a beautiful place of centeredness and a beautiful place of connection and of sacred acknowledgement. And I just, we're both kind of, you know, we love to see everybody on the world be like you, Richard.
Oh, hon, I'm glad to have people be who they are, but I appreciate the compliment, and I appreciate, I think we are, probably most folks I meet have a desire to connect more deeply with themselves and to find balance. You know, we all need that. We're all looking to have that reflected and resonate back to us from others around us. So I certainly would encourage everyone to continue that quest. You know, it's about finding what works for you, what makes you feel good, you know, what brings out the best parts of self and really enhances your potential as a human being, you know. And you don't have to get all corny about it, but, you know, there are moments, in those quiet moments, we certainly all have those reflections, and we really want to live openly and live well, and to know within our being that we're doing well by ourselves, so we can be there for our friends and our family and, you know, and community, and just to honor life. Yeah, that's exactly what it is, to honor life in its most fundamental way. Now, I have to say, I have to let you know, you may not think this, but I'm quite tall. I'm 6'5", and I weigh 250 pounds. So I eat a lot. And I swim a lot. I get a hell of a lot of exercise. I'm a swimmer. So I
love swimming. Swimming is the best thing seriously, swimming.
Yeah.
I was born buoyant, and I just float. I can be in like 190,000 feet of water, and people would use me as a raft. I seriously don't sink, ever. I don't sink. I don't know why. I don't know why. I just don't sink.
I just wanted to clarify, Richard, I didn't mean that we want everybody to be Richard clones, but what I meant is that we want, it's about intention.
Absolutely.
And everybody to be like you.
And everybody to have the same intention about the we, you know, and recognizing, you know, it's not only just about the me, it's about the we, and you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, then that's what.
Yeah,
I
absolutely. Because your energy, I mean, our energies right now are, you know, we're part of a bigger, a greater whole here, and everyone is. You know, it's about we are consciousness. You know, I mean, when you get down to kind of the fundamental realities here, and I don't want to get into theoretical physics for too long, but the bottom line is that we do share a consciousness, and that's really it's a fundamental reality. That and matter are the fundamental realities, and so we are all very much connected. And we have an obligation and a joy, really, to pursue that and to be the best people we can be for ourselves and for one another. So, yeah, it's cool. I mean, I learn every day from it. I learn from everybody. I try to be without ego as much as possible, and I truly do. I just enjoy human beings and all creatures, but I'm always trying to – I'm open to learning, so I'm surprised by the things I can learn. So it's fun.
Well, always a teacher, always a student, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm a better student than teacher, I think. So, I like learning. I chose not to teach too much because it was just hard for me to get there. You know, I could only do it. I'd have to kind of put it away. It's like I could only teach what I was really passionate about today. You know, it's like it was not.
Yeah.
It wasn't going to work in universities where you had, you know, you had the syllabus and you had the courses all laid out and the outlines. And I'd look at it and I'd just start to wilt, and I would realize I could not ever do that. So bless those who can. I'm just not one of them.
Well, yeah, and you also would be concerned about tenure, right? So you got to watch out for that.
Right, I don't have to worry about that now. I'm happily untenured, you know. So I'm just kind of freewheeling it here. So far, I'm doing okay. You know, I'm hanging in. I'm fine today, so we're good.
Well, I want to invite callers to call in to 888-815-9756.
Call in, please.
Ask you any questions that are arising as a result of our conversation. Cool. In the meantime, I'm really interested in knowing, you brought up Buddhism, and I'm a bit familiar. I know that you've just said that you're a quarter American Indian, correct?
Yes. Are you
in terms of your spiritual philosophy, have you incorporated maybe even native philosophy, or what if you were to share your spiritual philosophy, how would you go about doing that comfortably?
Well, I think in some ways I have been touching on it every moment that we've been speaking and sharing with each other tonight. I mean, there's a sense of this connection at a deeper level with a sense, you know, communication is all about finding community, really. Ultimately, and I think the my native ancestors were very much a part of their Mohawk background, Iroquois in Mohawk Nation, as they're referred to here and by the English speaking, and they were just kind of wide open people and monster warriors too. I mean, they were very tough warriors. They were kind of embattled at various stages from all over, and so their job was to hold the fort for the whole Iroquois Confederacy, which is the number of tribes all across the New York State. So, but in general, you know, there's they also were very much embracing newcomers. They would take in. They would adopt the members of other tribes. They would adopt whites. And once you're a Mohawk, you're a Mohawk. You know, you get full rights. So you come on in and you're good, you know. So they had this really unique, it was a very unique philosophy. And they were just very much a part of community. And I guess I'm kind of like that. And I'm just kind of, and my grandparents were like that. And at the clan meetings on the weekends, people would just show up and eat and play. And, you know, we kind of knew a lot of them, but not everybody, you know. People would kind of roll in, and it would just be this large kind of big festival thing in my grandparents' house and on their farm. And so it was just kind of cool. And I don't want to go off on an explicit spiritual discussion, but that reflects very clearly, I think, who I am. And, I was raised Roman Catholic. I was raised in an Irish Catholic church, and I went to parochial school for 12 years. I learned my Latin. I was an altar boy, indeed. And I learned lots of French because they were French, French order of nuns, the Sisters of St. Joseph, a 350-year-old order of French nuns, and quite extraordinary beings. So I learned a lot from them as well, and without getting into all the things that I wished I hadn't learned, some of those, but I learned a lot about discipline and to reflect on things in a powerful way, and they were also very much about finding your way in the community and being generous and kind and giving of oneself. So I learned, in large measure, some open-heartedness there. So. I try not to talk about spirit directly because it kind of confounds me. So,
So that, you know, here this is a great lead-in to the next question, because I saw on your Facebook you had it had to do with the Ions of Ocala. You said building bridges between science and spirit.
Yes.
And yes. would you care to elaborate on that a little bit? Just because this is beautiful that you're kind of bringing the spirit to the mind and vice versa. And how does that work for you, and how does it serve you and help you to sort of bring it to others so they can maybe have a greater understanding of where you're coming from with it?
All righty. Well, Ions, that's a local community group, and I have since turned that over to another leader as I move on to do some other things, but I am connected with the broader Institute of Noetic Sciences, which is based in California, started by Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut. And the basic tenets are trying to explore kind of subtle consciousness, the interiority of our lives with what we know from physical science, and trying to bridge those seemingly unbridgeable bits of information. How does my intuition, how do my feelings, what I think, what I feel, how do my daydreams connect with you know, the material world, with the things we learn in science class, with science teaches us or has taught us. And so we've been trying to find ways to integrate knowledge and to learn about brain, the brain more in context of the mind and in terms of consciousness, and see how it functions when you move out of the more standard scientific models and paradigms, and really offering up a new equation, which we need to be bigger. We need to be more kind with folks who have feelings and intuitions and subtle knowledge. We need to think that knowledge is that knowledge comes from different places, and that it all adds up in some fashion. We do know now, in fact, that, you know, to be honest, that science has brought us to a point, physics particularly, where a lot of concepts that we were raised with are quite shaky. Even the sense of terms like space and time really are just transitional terms. That when you get down to the kind of the Planck scale, which is the fundamental level of reality of the subatomic particles, when you get down to that scale, you're looking really not at particles. You're not looking at matter or waves. You're not really looking at entities that exist. You're looking at potential entities. And we don't have a sense of where those entities are going to go, but we do know that that's kind of the essence of life, and that's the essence of consciousness, and we're trying to find ways to begin to understand what that knowledge brings to us. Also, that time and space are really much, much more fluid. We've been on the clock, we've been on the calendar here in the Western world for a long time, but that really doesn't speak to what we all know is a deeper reality at some level intuitively, and we are now finding that science is now finding this is, we're in a kind of an evolutionary stage here, and we're kind of morphing into a new being. There's a new equation developing. We just haven't figured it out yet. Physicists really are kind of stuck. I mean, they know all this. They don't know how it kind of squares up with the material world as we understand it. So they don't know what to do with gravity. They know what to do with kind of the strong and the weak forces, and they know what to do with the electromagnetic forces, but gravity just does not fit. We can't find a way to fit that into a unified understanding, and gravity is about, you know, about matter. So that's kind of where we are, and I guess the bridge then is between, gee, how do I know things? You know, we have intuitions, we have feelings, we have all these, you know, we experience life, we experience love, we experience all these things that science really can't teach us much about. So we need to find ways to develop a bigger language, and to be able to have some cross-communication there. It's been ongoing for several decades, started probably more actively in the 60s and 70s, certainly. Some pioneers of the new consciousness beginning to open these doors, and new psychology opening up those doors, and now what has become New Age and so forth, as well as embracing the world, other world religions and philosophies here in the West. So These topics are ongoing and actively debated, and there's a sense of, you know, we're kind of coming into a newer, deeper understanding of what we human beings are all about, and probably it's going to be a little while before we sort it out. So, but it's an exciting, challenging process, and I think the key to IONS and the key to what we've been doing is to try to be more inclusive. We don't want to exclude people because they know things, and maybe they don't know how to describe they know things, or they can't, or it doesn't fit the model that we're working from. We need to allow our models to flex, allow our models to grow, allow our models, the ways in which we think about the world to expand and to embrace different ways of knowing. And that's really what the bridge is about. So, in a very short form, and I apologize to any hard scientists out there who are chuckling about my little foray into quantum physics. But for now, I think that'll probably do.
Well, we appreciate that foray into quantum physics, because it's, you know, it's for the layman, it's easily understood. So thank you for that.
Cool, that's where I was going.
it can get so convoluted.
It's gravity, Cheryl. Yeah. And Ash, we don't know what to do with it. I mean, that's really what it's about. It's interesting, isn't it?
It is. It's fascinating. I mean, it's just one of the many, many things that you've touched upon in your life. And it's just, it's quite fascinating. I mean, if you were to sort of describe even the timeline of your life, one of the things that Ash wanted to know is, who was your most substantial mentor? Do you have anybody in particular that really launched maybe even just your curiosity? Because I see a real and feel a real curiosity with you.
Oh, that's a good question. Gosh, I think just a whole bunch of, almost every teacher I've ever had has opened up something for me. I think I've just been really hungry to understand, you know, and that's, it's led to a kind of this desire to always stay open to learning. So I think almost everybody, you know, I'm always learning things. It'd be hard to focus on one or two. I used to have a pretty extensive library, a lot of which I donated when I moved from Massachusetts to Florida, because I had already read those books and I just didn't think I was going to go back and read them again. So it was kind of a way of making my peace with parts of my learning, but also acknowledging that I wanted to be learning in different ways and kind of thinking in terms of wholes rather than parts. So, I don't think I'm going to name anybody because I wouldn't want to exclude anyone. So I'm always learning. I'm learning a lot tonight.
Well, then I would say that based on what I've learned from you just in these short few minutes is you would probably, the next question might not even be relevant, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because what I get from you is that you're constantly learning, and your life has been a progression and a constancy. Yeah. And do you feel that you've had any particular years of your life that had the most impact on shaping who you are right now, or has it been just an ongoing shaping?
Oh, I think probably trial. The years of trial were difficult. You know, some difficult years, pain through a lot of loss of parents. My father died in my teen years. Loss of friends and family. I think probably I've learned a lot through loss. So, and you know, the occasional health matter, but more just trying to deal with the sensitivity of a person of great, you know, love and affection not being there in my life anymore. And I think those moments probably have instructed me to go deeper and to try to deal more honestly with who I was and who I wanted to be. And so I don't know if it was in particular years. I think everything is probably in the great flow of my life coming and going. I've learned different things at different times, but I would say loss has been a major element. And I think it is probably for us all, but certainly has been for me. And I tried to open to it. I tried to find my way there and to allow it to speak to me and to kind of crack me open, you know, and it can be disabling for time, you know. It's kind of a deep meditation on life and being, and that's still what I guess kind of the essence of what I'm about is, I guess.
That's very poignant. I would say that loss is, you know, is a big one for each and every one of us, because it seems there's a permanence to it, and then if something's taken away, you know, we're feeling that something's lost, something's gone. It can actually feel that we physically, in some way, emotionally have actually given up a piece of ourselves. How would you, if someone, just based on your going through loss on a personal level, how would you convey to another who was in a state of loss to get to the other side of it, if there is, in fact, another side of it?
Well, I would share my experience. I did, as you know, I was trained as a psychologist and worked in that area for many years, but I'll speak now from my personal experience. I think loss really has its own course, and for each it's different, and it's important to make it meaningful and to normalize it. It's okay to feel the pain, and it means something to feel that pain. It means something to feel, you know, the degree of either anger or, just missing the other or fear of not being able to go on ever in the same way again. It's okay to honor those feelings, I think, and to embrace them for a time. The old rule of thumb was that it takes 2 years to grieve properly for someone that you've been close to. So I think there's a sense of wanting to be patient and compassionate with oneself, because that will then elicit that from others. And to give it time and to not worry. You're going to be a different person loss will add a dimension. It won't change you. It'll probably expand you. You'll add another dimension, another place now where you can visit within yourself, another place you can go that you'll need to revisit when you have other losses. Often it doesn't make sense. It depends on the nature of the loss, too, if it's of a parent or a child or a spouse or a very close family member. Well, then that the dimensions, the dynamics of that can be very different. I think in general, just to believe that it has value and to not get caught up in worrying that others are going to perceive you in a kind of in a negative way, I guess, or in an odd way. Most folks will give you time, and they'll be there for you if you give them an opportunity. So being able to share that and to be to find value. So it's more about finding value and meaning. So much of what we have to do is to turn the stories of our life and the experiences of our life into meaningful and valuable moments that we can then put in a journal or lock away somewhere or use on a daily basis or share with others, you know, that they're all these nuggets that are there for us to access and to believe in. So I guess that's kind of in a brief way what I would say.
That's beautiful. I appreciate that. That's beautiful. I'm sure that will help many people who are listening right now. We do have some callers for you, Richard. We first have Catherine on line 2 from Canada. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi, hi, Cheryl. Hi, Ash.
Hi.
Hi, Catherine.
Talk to you again. I just love what you're doing with Hologram and your latest works together.
Thank you.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you, Catherine. Do you have a question for Richard?
Yes, Richard, have you ever heard about the Monroe Institute?
Yes, I have. Very much so. In fact, the Monroe Institute is in a partnership with IONS, of which I've spoke previously, and at the local level here in Ocala, one of my very dear friends, Jean McDaniels, is a trainer for the Monroe Institute, and she frequently does workshops in this area. Yes.
Yes. So I feel like that's a prime example of science and spirituality working together and finding a common ground. They've done some tremendous discoveries.
I would agree with that. Yes, they've done a lot of very unique research that's been quite powerful and very, very influential. Yes. Have you been there, Catherine?
I have a friend that... Hello?
What is your experience, Catherine, with the Monroe Institute?
I have taken a couple of classes from Paul Elder. Have you heard of Paul Elder? And he teaches remote viewing.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm familiar with remote viewing, certainly.
Yes. That is my experience connection with the Monroe Institute. He teaches classes here in Canada locally.
Oh, wonderful.
And has tremendous insight into why and how the remote viewing works.
Cool.
And how it first started.
What was that like for you?
It was amazing because it combined the scientific part with the spiritual part for me, because I am a psychic medium, and so it kind of gave credibility to what I was doing.
Yes. Did you feel it was able to sharpen your abilities or to clarify them?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it shows that you don't have to have the raw ability to do that. Anyone can develop that. mm-hmm. and they've proven that with people like in the military.
Well, thank you, Catherine, for sharing that and for bringing up the spirituality and the science and letting others know in Canada here that that's available for them. And it's neat that I love a lot of things are based in California, I've noticed. A lot of these things come from California and kind of make their ways up. And you're talking about ions, Richard. We have another caller. Thank you, Catherine.
We love
Bye.
You, Catherine. We love you.
Thank you.
Bye, Catherine. Thank you.
Bye. We have another caller. We have Kevin on line one. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi, Kevin. Hi there.
Hey, Richard. This is Kevin, who was our former bass player.
Oh, hey, Kevin.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to phone up and say, why the hell do you have a new bass player? No, I'm just kidding.
Yep,
we've
you can tell we're with musicians.
To talk to Kevin.
just want to air my sour grapes. I kind of missed some of the show. I got caught in traffic trying to make the show here. But for Richard, I just wanted to thank you for the show, and I really appreciate your humility and your just how wide open you are to everything, and your whole outlook is quite inspiring to me. Being male in the spiritual quest, I meet a lot of women that are quite incredible in this area, but not so many men actually. So I really like what you have to say, and it's a lot of it resonates with me already. Plus, it inspires me to my next step. So I just really enjoyed hearing you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much, Kevin. It's good to know that my words were comforting, and that you were able to take that away with them. So that's wonderful.
Well, thank you very much. That's all I had to say, and I'd rather just hear you talk some more. So
okay, and listen, the next gig is just around the corner. It always is, you know.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
He already has it. Richard, he already has his gigs lined up. He's good.
He's already got five gigs. He's just teasing you,
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I have a huge respect for Hologram, and I love their work. And
wonderful.
And, we all love each other.
I know it's family. I do know that. I know who you are, by the way.
Oh, do you?
Okay. You're from the north too. You know, not Yorkshire, but the other people there over on the west.
I'm Lytham St. Anne's in Britain. music's a wonderful thing. I know you're involved in that too, and we're all just here for each other. As far as Hologram too, I'm completely there for them for
cool.
Whatever their next step is, if they need me. So it's all good. It's all good.
All righty. Good. Nice meeting you. Thanks
for
calling.
Thank you, Kevin. Yep.
Thank you, Kevin. Okay. Bye.
All right. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, bye, Kevin.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Richard, we have a few minutes left, and I have one big question. I think it's a pretty big question, and I would like you, at the end of this question, if you would be so kind as to let us know your books. You have two books coming out in 2011, and I'd like you to let everybody know about your books coming out so they can be ready for them. And also, I wanted to plug your ranchosacramento.com. So if you want to find out more about one of Richard's nature reserves, just go to www.ranchosacramento.com. This is my question for you, Richard, and this is what we're going to end with.
Yes,
and as well as your books titles, just let us know about your books a bit. But my question to you is this: who or what do you think can change the world, and in what ways do you think the world needs to change?
Well, how much time do I have?
you've got a good 5 minutes.
Oh, hell, I don't need that much time, honey. Oh, goodness. I think we are all empowered to change the world. I'm not sure it needs changing, because changing implies there's something radically wrong, maybe. And that may not be what you mean. So I'm going to try to reframe it a little bit so that I would see what we all have an opportunity to include, to be more inclusive of ourselves and one another, and to grow. to increase our awareness, to improve the state of our collective consciousness, if you will, and to move forward. I think we are a really interesting planet in terms of our growth trajectory here. It's not always easy to see where we're heading, but I do have ultimate faith that as we gain increasing awareness and a greater sense of community, that we will do the things we need to do, and that we're able to solve our problems. And earlier you mentioned many people in particular who came to mind. And I will mention, let me mention, and I know you know who I'm speaking of. I mentioned Buckminster Fuller because early on in my life, I knew him. We had a mutual friend, and so I became a friend to him, and vice versa. And he was someone who believed that, you know, we could actually fix things. You know, we could improve our sustainability. We could provide shelter for everyone. We could provide enough food for everyone. He had the equations worked out. You know, he actually he fully, utterly believed it, and he was someone who I thought was extremely inspiring. You know, for me at that point. Coming into my own as an adult and looking for guidance. So he was someone who I listened to in a more intense way, and I realized, knowing him a bit, how committed he was, committed deeply in the heart, and committed as well an extremely capable mind. So I don't know if we need to change. We're going to grow. We need to grow, obviously, and we need to do a better job protecting ourselves and our planet than we've done. And we need to find, I think, maybe a better sense of mission and community than we've found. We're beginning to do that. Social networking is helping, I think. Finding our way. I mean, what we're doing right now is a gift. We're able to connect through these, you know, so many miles, and to have a few moments together. So, thank you. The book I'm wanting to mention now is Revolutions of Mercy. It will be out in several months. And the other is Dingus Malone. That might take a bit longer to get to press as things have developed, but the first is a really beautiful love story and very special, and really incorporating, embracing a lot of what we're talking about tonight. So it takes place in one of my ancestral's homes, which is Vermont, in a rural area, and it's kind of a small story with a kind of a big message. So thank you very much for mentioning that, and gosh, have I done enough here to answer your question?
Well, we kind of are in love with you here.
Oh, now, bless you.
I got to say, one day I'm going to meet you. I'm going to make you a mixtape, and we're going to have some lemonade.
Oh.
I'm so excited. One day it'll happen.
You know, let's stay friends. We are friends now, so we can hang, yes. You know. We can Skype and stuff.
We're going to hang.
Definitely. Well, Richard, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. And you've touched our lives, and you've touched the lives of many people, our listeners and future listeners when they grab the archives and have a listen to what you have to say. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
And before we go, Cheryl and Ash, thank you so much. It's been such a treat for me, and it's a pleasure and an honor to be here. And you've asked some really good and some really tough questions. You gals are tough.
We kept you on your toes, Richard, but you more
are
than
you. Are you rock definitely... musicians by any chance? Because I can't believe it.
You've done great. You're fabulous.
Thanks. Good luck with the band. I want to hear
Thank
it. You know.
You. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's on iTunes. We have 4 singles on iTunes.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Well, I'm going to check them out. Thank you. Good.
Thank you.
And again, I just want to plug your books, Richard. Can you say who the publisher is, please?
Yes, it's Cusack and Hines. They'll be the digital versions, and we're quibbling over enhanced digital stuff now, which is audio, video stuff. That's kind of why things are a bit pullback. I kind of said I want this to happen, so we're working our way through that one. But I will give you information as you can pass along over time when we get that bit sorted out. Technology is at such warp speed right now that things get kind of in the loop very quickly. So it's all, as you know, it's happening very rapidly. So.
It is. Well, that's wonderful. I'm just going to say your titles again. Revolutions of Mercy, New England Winter's Romance,
that's
and The Untimely Abortion of Dingus Malone. What an interesting title.
And you can imagine what that is.
I think I can.
Yeah, there you go.
That being said, we wish you all the best. Blessings to you, Richard. We look forward to a continued friendship. For those of you who are listeners, in 2 weeks from now, we have magic That our second portion of our magic show that we did, I think, 8 weeks ago now. We've got part two. So that goes out for you, Jax, and for the rest of you who want to continue discussing that. And until then, we invite you to kiss a tree, love each
kiss
other.
Kiss a tree.
Love yourselves.
Love yourself.
Bye.